You are listening to Expanding Horizons, the podcast of the Unitarian Church of South Australia, a home of progressive spirituality and free religious thought and action since 1854. Views expressed in these podcasts are those of the speaker and are not intended to represent the position of the church itself or of the worldwide Unitarian Universalist movement. For more information, visit unitariansa.org.au.
Laughter and Spirituality, Psychology Today by Dr. René Garfinkel. Religion has an image problem. It is badly in need of rebranding. Religion's public image is grim. It's all fire and brimstone and Dante's Inferno. Severe and reproving, religion's reputation is largely one of humorless inhibition and pleasure-fearing. Even New Age religions, the self-described more spiritual, in quotes, religion light, spelled L-I-T-E at the end, of the genre, even they seem to emphasize a life of what's good for you, with a whiff of tofu and kale. Religion's grim attributes would present enough of a PR challenge without the added baggage of the folks who truly give religion a bad name. The holy warriors whose trade is terror, the cartoon-inflamed violent mobs, paedophiles in the pews, corruption in backrooms, misogyny out front, and hypocrisy on a scale matched only by politicians. This, for the broad news-reading public, this is the face of religion. It isn't a pretty face. And it isn't complete face either. Most religions agree that humor and laughter are central to a spiritual life. Holocaust survivor Viktor Frankl, the founder of logotherapy, who knew more than most about the depths to which humanity can sink, said, "Humor, more than anything else in the human makeup, can afford an aloofness and an ability to rise above any situation, if only for a few seconds." End of quote. Those few seconds are the doors that let spirituality in. This is the truth understood by great religious leaders and practitioners. The Dalai Lama's photos often show him with a ready smile, giggling in interviews and laughing on stage. The popular televangelist Joel Osteen famously begins his sermons with, in quotes, "I'd like to start with something funny," in the tradition of good preachers and teachers everywhere who realize that laughter makes people more receptive to the message and to the sense of connection with one another. Indeed, there are yoga paths that emphasize laughter, and even worldwide laughter yoga movement. The Baal Shem Tov, founder of the Jewish Hasidic movement, noted, in quotes, "Humor is that thing which ushers a person's mind from a place of constricted consciousness to a place of expanded consciousness. Humor is that thing which ushers a person's mind from a place of constricted consciousness to a place of expanded consciousness." It is a profound observation at the nexus of psychology and spirituality. The Talmud tells a story in which Elijah, the prophet, points at two people in the marketplace who will have a share in the world to come. Who are they? Why, comedians, jesters who cheer people up when they are sad and try to make peace between people who are quarreling.
Thanks, Hugh. I think you've all been given a balloon by the ushers, is that right? Do you got one? Good. If you haven't, just raise your hand and maybe they'll be able to get one to you. Knowing you as I do, I took care to make sure they were all alike, apart from color, so there's, you know, get moans about, oh, I like that shape better than this shape, and so on. Now, they don't blow up into funny different shapes, you know, not unless round is funny and different. And if round is funny and different, they're all equally funny. So we're going to blow these up a little at a time over the next few minutes, because balloons are thought to be a symbol of fun, like clowns. Hilarious or what? But don't tie them off. Just pinch them close so they don't fly away like the cicada in the story. So let's just have a little start. Ready? There. That's a really good... It's not a contest. It's just... Oh, there we go. There we go. Now look, I swear... Oh, how hard could it be? These are the lungs of a 60-year-old long-term smoker. If I can inflate this, anyone can. If anybody uses the neck of it to make that shrill farting noise, I'm going to turn this church around and we will not have any fun today. Or this story begins, and we'll blow this up as I tell this story, with a child, because balloons are like children and, you know, childhood and so on. Specifically, my youngest child, Rosie, who grew up on a farm and still acts like it. One day, try another go. One spring day like this, when Rosie and I were out in those paddocks checking on our sheep, Rosie and I decided it would be a great idea to do that on the back of our stock horse, the aptly named Rebel. The only hitch was that Rebel was wandering the paddock like we were, and Rebel wasn't saddled or bridled, and we didn't have our helmets with us, but I'd been practicing riding bareback, Apache style. Steering with my knees and a handful of mane. It was a nice day, there wasn't any rush, so Rosie and I conspired in secret. We said, should we do it? And we went, yeah, let's do it. So Rosie grabbed some loosened hay and called the horse, and the horse started snaffling it from her hand. And as she was doing this, I grabbed the mane of the horse, I hoiked myself up onto Rebel's back, and I reached down and I grabbed my little monkey of a daughter and sat her in front of me, and off we went. I remember thinking, if this isn't nice, what is? Me and my kid, horseback, sunny day, our own wide rolling land, peace and quiet, Rebel ambling along nicely, responsive to command, so far. If you hear a but on the way, you're right and I'm the but. Because in my exuberance, I insisted on freshening up our pace just a little bit up a slope to see about a couple of wayward lambs, and Rebel, true to form, zigged when she should have zagged, and I felt myself slipping off to the left. Despite my vice-like knee grip, my center of gravity had gone too far, and the next thing I knew, I was falling off a 6-foot horse, taking little Rosie with me. Time slowed and seemed to stop for a moment. Like I was suspended in midair for a second, during which moment all of the possible ramifications, all of the ramifications of what could, would, or should happen next flashed before my eyes. Children take their cues from parents about how to react to trouble. So if I panicked and freaked out, she would learn to panic and freak out when things like this happen. If I didn't panic and freak out, she might learn that falling down wasn't what matters. What matters is getting back up. If I guilt-tripped and shamed myself for being such a bonehead, she'd learn to beat herself up for accidents like this. Somehow, during these mid-air deliberations, I rolled or was rolled to my left, and I hit the ground with her on my belly. I had become her airbag. I'd love to say I chose to land like that, but it happened so quickly, this slow moment of time, that I can never be sure if it was an instinct or choice or just good luck to have her 20 kilos fall on top of my 85 instead of the other way around. But as we hit, I heard and felt the unmistakable snick of a rib cracking. I had landed on an exposed tree root. Oof. We lay there, and she saw that I had contorted in pain, so we lay there for another minute, and just as we hit, and just as I went oof, the horse turned around and looked at us, and then the horse let go a fully intentional and copious evacuation right beside us. Rosie looked at me. We're on the ground. We'd fallen from a great hike. I was obviously hurt. We were supplying a steaming pile of horse crap. She's got panic in her eyes, and this question, unspoken, how am I supposed to feel about this? And I simply decided to laugh. And she burst out laughing. She laughed so hard she wept and gasped and hooted. She said, "We fell!" I said, "I know!" She said, "And the horse pooped it like right the same time." And I went, "I know!" And she said, "I thought we were gonna die!" And I said, "Maybe we have died and this is what heaven is like." And she said, "I think I'm gonna die right now." And I said, "Me too!" And we laughed so hard we gasped and wept and hooted. And we let go for just a moment and it felt like this. Let him go. Well, God or whatever means the good be praised that time can stop as it did for us that day. A laughing minute seems like an eternal one. Can you remember a time when you were seized with such giddy, uncontrollable, face-aching, gut-busting laughter that you thought you'd literally die? Tell somebody next to you about the last time you can remember that happening. A couple of minutes. Maybe you've had a time to share it. Maybe you've just been able to call a time to mind. But you know what that's like, that release. I just love that. And all I could think of when everybody let go was, not the candles, not the candles, not the candles. Just, you know. And by the way, those of you who are, you know, concerned about the waste, I'm going to recollect and reuse these at some point. And don't worry, because I know it's a little, you know, not hygienic. I've got a little, you know, hand pump thing for these sorts of things. So it's going to be all right. And if you pick up mine, I have got nothing catching. It's these, the cold sores have, you know, gone away. Just as everybody, and you've seen this in each other's faces just now, just like everybody's beautiful when they sleep, everybody's beautiful when they laugh. Yeah? And as today's reading says, churches in general are bad at making people beautiful from laughter. Making people beautiful by putting them to sleep, they're good at, I grant you. Church is about things that matter, which means church is serious, but that doesn't mean church has to be solemn and funereal. Joy matters, so there needs to be room for laughter in church, and much of it if we are going to celebrate our full humanity and see more clearly the very real comic side to all our trouble and striving. As the philosopher William Hazlitt said, man is the only animal that laughs and weeps because he's the only animal struck with the difference between what things are and what they ought to be. It's another way of saying a comic take is enabled by a cosmic take. When we take a higher, larger perspective, our human life, as Dante called it, is not a hell, but a divine comedy. Why? Because like all good comic sitcoms, life goes back to the way it was at the beginning. Your life, my life, everybody's. The same, dust to dust, but better for having enjoyed this wild, bucking ride called life. The cosmic view makes for a comic view. Everything seems funnier at a distance of space or time. And the Buddha sure knew this, which is why we see him like this so much. See? No, it's not what you think it means. Seeing the bigger picture is always a balm to a spirit. The enlightened view, the truly enlightened view is comic. To that end, Neil is going to teach us a song that should become a Unitarian hymn, but we can't get the copyright. It's by the guy that wrote a lot of the songs for Monty Python's Flying Circus. It's called the Galaxy Song, and we're going to play it through one time so you get the tune. Moving at a million miles a day, In the outer spiral, stand, please stand as you're able. We're going to have a crack at this. Just remember that you're standing on a planet that's evolving, revolving at 900 miles an hour. It's orbiting at 19 miles a second, so it's reckoned the sun that is the source of all our power. The sun and you and me and all the stars that we can see are moving at a million miles a day. At the outer spiral arm at 40,000 miles an hour of a galaxy we call the Milky Way. Please be seated. I'm going to get that in the new hymn book, I promise you. If we really became of how fast we're all really moving through the great void of space, the wild ride we call life would feel something like this. Doer old Protestant-derived faiths like ours often forget the church should be about joy, too, enjoyment. But church has to be more than just a cheap form of entertainment in a world full of elaborate and entertaining distractions. No, church is about building awareness and virtue and character, and if it is not, then we are truly wasting our time here, pretending that lame dad jokes and cheap prop gags are worth your time and trouble. Laughter is a serious matter, not solemn, serious, and more so than you'd think. I'll give you an example. A former student of mine is a writer for TV sitcoms in Los Angeles. In his early days, he used to hang around the traps with an older, more experienced crew to see what he could pick up in the way of material. This bunch of old comedy writers would sit around in a cafe, drinking, smoking, swapping jokes, one-liners, gags, and, you know, they'd all laugh and chuckle and guffaw, as you'd expect. But every once in a while, somebody would come along and come up with something really good, like perspective-changingly good. And the table of comics would go quiet, and one of these professional comedians would knit his brow and say, "Now that's funny." And they'd all nod like dons, pondering some new theory. Laughter is a serious business. Falling off Rebel with Rosie taught me not just that this is serious, that laughter's not just a happy accident that happens to you once in a while if you're lucky enough to come to a church like this. No, laughter, even in the face of mishaps, is something you can choose. Laughter, even in pain, can be intentional. You can mean to, want to, see the funny side of anything. And if laughter can be chosen, it can be practiced. Laughter is a legitimate spiritual practice, and it's not just me that says so. One I would recommend as being unequivocally good for you, capable of building greater awareness, greater virtue, greater character, capable of making you the kind of person who spreads not more anxiety and gloom in an already tough world, but spreads joy like the sun spreads sunshine, radiating everywhere. For one thing, as we've seen from the simple joy of the flying balloon trick we just did, laughter's a kind of safety valve for the soul. It releases pent-up spiritual energy into the world. It's a way of saying, I love this life! I love this world! It's not perfect! I'm not perfect! Things aren't the way they could be, would be, should be, and neither am I! And that's how it is! Who wouldn't want to be around that kind of spirit? And the best humor always has an edge of self-deprecation to it. It is good to laugh at yourself. Because if you can laugh at yourself, you can forgive yourself, right? And if you can forgive yourself, you can forgive other people too. Talk about growing spiritual maturity. And since we are the only creatures who truly laugh and weep, who truly see the difference between how things are and how they should be, it means we laugh because we're built to laugh. And if that dual nature of ours, seeing what is and what could be, is indeed unique in the universe, maybe laughter is indeed innately spiritual, which means that if there is a God, he's laughing his ass off too. The mind, the body, and the soul all benefit from laughter. The health benefits of humor and laughter are well documented. As far back as 1979, TV producer Norman Cousins was one of the first to popularize the idea of laughter as medicine. Cousins actually overcame a painful battle with connective tissue disease by prescribing himself regular laughter from a daily dose of Marx Brothers comedies. Recent scientific findings support Cousins' joyous discovery. Because according to a recent study from the University of Oxford, laughter triggers the release of mood-boosting brain chemicals and increases, therefore, your threshold to pain. Other major recent clinical studies show that laughter significantly increases blood flow, strengthens the immune system, raises good cholesterol, lowers blood sugar. And it would come as no surprise to practitioners of breathing-related things like yoga and meditation that laughter deepens the breath. Deepens the breathing, oxygenates. So when you laugh, you respirate. You take in big gulps of the source of life itself. You reconnect fully with the world outside you. No wonder inspiration and respiration share a common root word, spirit. And beyond these utilitarian benefits for the individual, studies have also shown that laughter has significant benefits in social settings as well. People who laugh together are more inclined to share personal stories and quirks that break down the usual stiffness and social awkwardness we suffer. So people who laugh together are more inclined to trust and be open to each other. And this in turn creates bonds of compassion and tolerance and acceptance. Even in the normally staid confines of formal meetings, like at work, laughter has been shown to generate a greater flow of creative ideas in meetings. So as a social lubricant, laughter beats alcohol, and with none of the depressive side effects. So laughter as a spiritual practice, good for the health of the body, good for the mood and the creativity of the mind, good for the social fabric. But what about the soul? Well, friends, in dark times like ours, I want to suggest to you that laughter is more than just about feeling good, alone or in company. It can also be about doing good. Laughter is, indeed has always been, an ethical choice. An ethical choice. Arguably, a joke is the most effective means of truth-telling, like a preacher, except with funnier material. Traditionally, it was the role of the fool to say in jest what no one wanted to hear. The court jester whose gag reflex made it easier for people to choke down and swallow the most unpalatable truths. And this tradition continues today in the best stand-up, as any of you who have seen Hannah Gadsby's Nanette stand-up act would know. And if you haven't, you must. She shines a brilliant spotlight on such hard and off-putting stuff as homophobia, misogyny, even sexual violence in such a self-deprecatingly hilarious way that we don't look away for a change, and can even examine the presence of such evils in our own souls. That act is an amazing ethical achievement. Laughter is an ethical choice, too, as an effective means of resisting dehumanizing and unjust power structures. I mean, political satire, since the early days of the press, have pricked the bloated bladders of the powerful with the poignard of pithy wit, corrupt kings, generals, bishops. In the darkest days of the Cold War, Tom Lehrer made us laugh at things like Armageddon and nuclear Armageddon and racism. And more recently, people are getting more and more accurate news, not from corporate media, but from a core of core comedians. And with meme-making tools in the hands of virtually everyone with a computer, ridiculing those ridiculously in power is easy and an ethical choice anyone can make. Finally, laughter is an ethical choice because it promotes optimism and hope over pessimism and despair. And I claim we have a duty to lighten our world by imagining that things can be other than they are. If laughter can tell difficult truths and harness it as a powerful creative force, we can imagine something to be different from what we thought it was. And if we can imagine something to be different and reframe it, then we can imagine a world to be different and reframe that. So choosing to laugh at falling off a horse, rather than panicking, rather than moaning, rather than going, ah, hell, and cursing your fate. choosing that. Optimism is inherent in this. And optimism is an ethical choice because it refuses to accept that what's happened is irrevocable, that the dark and threatening world is unchangeable. It shows instead that a new and different and better world might yet be made. As you know, if you've been coming here even a little while, my aim is to make this not just a church of goody-good people, but a church of joyful people, where laughter is not merely permitted, but expected. Required even, because laughter builds healthy minds, healthy bodies, tougher yet more tender hearts. Laughter builds character and resilience and hope. And it's not a matter of feeling like it. We can freely choose to laugh, and so seek these benefits consciously and choose them against our own inclinations or the passions of whatever the fleeting moment is. I know this all too well. Because while I was writing the second half of this service on laughter as a spiritual practice, something really trying happened. There I was in my office, writing hot. It was flowing out. I was typing. It was as late in the week. Inspired. The sentences were coming out beautifully, beautifully constructed, elegant in rhythm and wordplay. The creative juices are really flowing, and I'm saying to myself, this is good. This is going really good. And in my pride and confident joy, I sped up the pace a little because I could see the end point. I could see the close as clear as day. And in that exuberant dash, I hit some key or other, and the document closed, and everything I'd been so happily, effortlessly writing about laughter hadn't yet saved. It disappeared. Vanished, gone. The word balloon I was blowing up had burst, and for a moment I went, oh no! No! Ah! And then, of course, I remembered what I was writing. And I remembered that horse laugh, and Rosie and me on the ground, and how I chose that. And that I was writing about laughter as a choice, and then I could see myself at a distance, at a cosmic height, what I was, a little man alone in a room, flipping out at a blank screen and starting to trash his office. And I saw it for a moment as God might see it. And I decided to practice what I was preaching. So instead, I did this.
Even though it's breaking, when there are clouds in the sky, you'll get by if you smile through your fear and sorrow. Smile, and maybe tomorrow you'll see the sun shining through for you. Light up your face with gladness. Hide every trace of sadness. Although a tear may be ever so near, the time you must keep on trying. Smile, what's the use of crying? You'll find that life is still worthwhile if you just smile.
So as we enjoy these gifts of laughter, let us bear in mind that laughter itself is a gift, and one that we can give ourselves any time. It is a choice. So I recommend it to you not just as an effective spiritual practice, but also a kind of theology. Because if there is a creator God looking down at us from on high, having gone to all this trouble to create a being like us who's able to see not just how things are, but also how they should be, the least we can do to give thanks for this gift is to be entertaining. Amen.
but we hope you enjoyed this Expanding Horizons podcast. These podcasts are the intellectual property of the presenter. They can be used only with the express permission and appropriate acknowledgement of the presenter and the podcast used in its entirety. This permission can be obtained by emailing unitarianessay@bigpond.com. Please feel free to leave a comment or visit us on Facebook or Twitter by searching Essay Unitarians.